Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. John Boyne is one of Ireland's most accomplished contemporary novelists. His works have been translated into more than 50 languages and read worldwide. He's perhaps best known for The Boy in Striped Pajamas, a modern classic that continues to resonate with readers of all ages. Structured around the four classical elements, water, earth, fire, and air, the new novel, The Elements, presents four distinct yet thematically connected stories. Though the characters and circumstances differ, each story illuminates questions of responsibility, guilt, trauma, and ultimately the hope of redemption. Certainly a powerful meditation on human fragility and resilience, and it's a great pleasure to welcome John Boyne to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thank you for inviting me on.
In England, these were in the UK, and I guess even in Ireland, where these were published as separate books over, 2 years? Is that how that was done?
Yeah, it was every 6 months, four novellas, Water, Earth, Fire, Air, in that order. So I think we started in May of 2003, finished in November 24, and now we're putting them all together into one book called The Elements.
Does it read differently altogether, do you think?
I wanted each part of this book to be standalone, effectively. So theoretically, you could read them in any order. I've put them into the book in the order in which I wrote them. So a minor character from each one becomes the narrator of the next one. But I suppose a reader who came to the third one first, it would be just a different reading experience. Hard for me to know because I wrote them, but it would be possible, theoretically, yes. But I would advise people to read them in the order in which they came.
It was interesting to have some time for them to percolate before reading the next one, as opposed to in one fell swoop. But it is so fascinating the way you've done this, because it seems even over time that you allowed that time. I mean, you could have done the same thing in the UK or in Ireland and put it all together in one volume.
We are doing that now, but really at the start, it was because I was actually just writing the very first part, Water. I wanted to write something quite short. I've written quite a lot of long novels. So I'd sort of set myself this challenge of writing something that was going to be 40,000 words long and, you know, really tight and, you know, not a word wasted in it. But the problem was, as I was sort of two-thirds of the way through it, I had the idea for the whole sequence. So my original plan of writing one short book became four short books and one long book. So the best laid plans of mice and men, as they say.
Did it come fairly quickly, the idea of the elements being the through line?
Yeah, that came fairly quickly, because in the first section, Water, water is the running theme. Willow is has moved to an island off the west coast of Ireland. It's not named, but it's basically one of the Aran Islands. Her husband, we learn early on, was a swimming coach who has been jailed for his crimes against children. And she's asking whether she was enabling that over the years. And because water was running through this book so much, it then occurred to me, of course, that these four, you know, philosophical building blocks of the universe, I could write four stories connected. And when I thought of that, that's when I came to the idea of using the idea of abuse in the four ways: enabling, complicity, perpetrator, victim, and connecting it in that way. So it was kind of a lot to juggle in my head as I was really putting the whole plan together. But I trusted myself, I guess, to figure it out as I went along.
What was it about abuse that struck you as something that you wanted to explore in those four different contexts?
Well, I grew up in Ireland in the 70s and 80s. And as I'm sure you know, we have quite an unfortunate history of abuse in our country during that period. Not just, as people always think about, among priests, but actually among lay people as well. The school I went to, for example, several of my teachers went to jail. Ireland's most prolific paedophile, now serving 11 years in prison in Ireland, was my English teacher. And I was abused by another teacher there, as were quite a lot of other students. So it's something that has been, I guess, you know, in my head a lot over the years. And I've wanted to write, I wrote about it in one way in an earlier novel called A History of Loneliness about a decade ago. But this is a much more intense narrative, I think. And I really kind of needed to get to the place in my life where I was able to look at this story from sort of a distance, and to be able to think about, for example, the people who enable it, the people who do it, and try to ask questions about why they do it, rather than just writing the obvious sort of narrative where, you've got your villains and you've got your heroes. I think literature should be a bit more interesting than that. So I wanted to dig deeper into these people's lives and try to figure out what might lead them to do, not just the perpetrator, but I always say about Ireland that in all those years there was a very small minority of people committing those crimes, but a vast majority who knew about them and doing nothing about it. And that's always been the thing that has sort of fascinated me a little bit.
You mentioned Willow from the first part of this novel and the first part of this series, and that's an interesting character because this is someone who has basically fled the scene when their husband is jailed, goes to this island and changes their name, cuts their hair, and is trying to start a new life, and yet that's very hard to do.
It's hard to do because she's been with this man for almost 30 years. They've had two children together, and his trial has been a big moment in Ireland, a big celebrity moment. And she is asking herself the question. And when I started writing it, I wasn't really sure what the answer was going to be, but she's asking herself the question: did I know these things were going on? Did I just like my place in society? The fact that my husband was well known, was going on TV shows, and we had we had wealth, we had position in our parish, for example. Did I know? And if I didn't know, why didn't I know? So it's she's sort of almost damned if she doesn't, damned if she doesn't there, but she has to figure that out for herself. And I liked the idea of the island because there's so few people there that she spends the year there. And in that section, basically, in every chapter, she just ends up talking to somebody else. And it's through hearing their stories and through their own lives that she's able to kind of confront her own part in her own past and decide really where does she take her life from here.
And one of the relationships that is so pivotal and important is the relationship with her daughter, who is estranged for obvious reasons of not knowing where her mother was in all of this.
Yeah, Rebecca, the daughter, is one of the characters who isn't one of the narrators of the four sections, but reappears throughout the book in different parts. Readers who come to the book will hopefully enjoy sort of revisiting people along the way, that somebody who plays a big role in one part can be just in a chapter of another part. And yeah, so that we begin really with a mother-daughter relationship, and then the last section, as you mentioned, is a father-son relationship. And in between, we have two other things to concern ourselves with.
You also see through that with Rebecca coming in and out of the other books that the impact of what happened to her initially, of what she experienced in her life, has obviously ramifications and is firmly imprinted and makes her quite a bitter person.
She is, I suppose, yeah, she does have a lot of anger through the book. And I guess anybody who has been through that sort of experience or been related to that experience in some way will have a different way of coping with it and coming to terms with it. One of the things that I really aimed for was that when I got to the section where it's narrated by the survivor, I wanted in a way for that to be the most optimistic, because I wanted actually for the reader to feel that somebody can go through this as my victim does in the book, but could actually get to the place in their lives where they say, I'm not going to allow my abuser to have even a second's worth more trauma in my life. I'm going to acknowledge what's happened, I'm going to live with what's happened, and I'm going to get on with all the years that I have yet to come. Rebecca doesn't quite have that response in the book. She's dealing with other issues that I don't want to spoil for readers, but some of the other characters do.
As you get to the Earth section, the second part of the elements, I was fascinated by how you move ahead in time and how that is established. It isn't a set period of time for each section, but some time has gone by to allow these characters to grow and to move and in this case achieve some adulthood and yet not a lot of time to look back, but obviously the events still have an impact.
Because we move on to it, there's of the four, there's it's woman man narrators. So our second section, Earth, is a young man called Evan, a footballer, a real footballer, as in a British footballer. He's a footballer, and he's on trial with one of his teammates, and his teammate is accused of rape, and he is accused of filming this rape and doing nothing to stop it. And we get a lot of his backstory of how he came from the island originally, what brought him to England, the ambitions that he had that weren't fulfilled, and the journey that led him to become a footballer, because that just happens to be his skill, even though he doesn't particularly enjoy the sport very much. And there's a lot there, I think, about masculinity, about the way these football academies in Britain, for example, will take in boys at the age of like 7, 8 years old, and they're in this cocoon effectively, because they're building them as assets, and their education, their emotional maturity is not looked after, I think, in the same way as their sporting prowess, which can lead to very difficult and complicated relationships with women, and a very kind of like warped view of what women are, on the planet for. We had one of these big cases in Ireland a couple of years ago, and it was a rugby trial where something very similar happened, and those men were acquitted of that. But it was such a big sensational story in Ireland. It was something I really felt I wanted to write about at some point.
And this is a character, as you said, is a reluctant footballer and has other pursuits, wants to be an artist, and yet it is it's his feet and his talent that is keeps bringing him in, bringing him in, bringing him in, to the point where he comes from obscurity to a high level position on a major team. Which is more for survival than anything else, because it's what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, his basic problem is like he wants to be an artist, but he's simply not good enough, and that's the truth. That's the truth that he has to face up to. However, he has this, innate skill with a football, and he basically does reach the point where he just thinks, well, look, I could make a lot of money up till the point I'm sort of 30, and live the life after that that I choose to live. Even though I don't particularly like this game and I don't like the atmosphere in which I'm living, because he's not just reluctant to be a footballer, but he's just that very masculine environment is one that does not sit well with him.
John Boyne is our guest on this week's book show. The new novel is The Elements, and it is published by Holt. It is fascinating. I want to get to the other two elements, but it is fascinating to me as well how interesting this is as a way of telling a story, because you really do get like four really shocking, amazing endings. It's not just one ending. It's four really like hit you upside the head endings.
Well, look, it was a challenge, that's for sure, to write it. And the 2 and a bit years that I spent working on this book, there were moments where, because of the subject matter, like I'll be honest, it kind of got on top of me sometimes, because it's a lot to deal with in your head, spending a couple of
Yes.
years writing about a subject as dark as this. And also at times trying to find humanity in characters that I suppose we would traditionally think are completely lacking in that. And I suppose when I got to the third part, Fire, where it is a perpetrator and it's a woman who's a perpetrator, that was a lot of that voice was of all the books I've written in my life, I have to say that section was the hardest I've ever had to work on something, because it was just at times it felt like it was weighing down on me too much. But I guess that's the job, and setting out on the project, I knew it was going to be a it was going to be personal, and it was going to be moments where it was difficult. But I also felt if I could do it right, then it could be something really worthwhile.
I mean this as a compliment, but that's one of the hardest things I've ever read. I mean that's a tough read.
And actually, people who've read that say the same thing to me, that they've struggled a bit with that third section, Fire. There's not really a lot of lightness there. But I was still trying to find something in Freya, in that perpetrator, something to not justify her actions, but to give us some insight into why she behaves in the way that she does. And it is important, I think, to try to understand these things. The more, it's probably not an original thought, but the more that we can understand why people behave in this way, the more chance we might have of being able to prevent them from happening in the future. And for me, as a novelist, writing a story like that and digging deeper and deeper and deeper into her character and her voice, was my way of trying to find some answers to that pickle.
You touched on this earlier, and so allow me to go back to it for a moment. But in when we read other sections and we learn about characters from previous sections, did you know at the end of the novella, let's say the second or third novella, how that story of how that person was going to end up, or did that come in the writing of the next or later section?
It only came when I would move on to their section because, we mentioned the fact that in the UK they were published in four every 6 months, four pieces. So by the time the first one was in shops, I was working on the third one. So, and when the second one was in the shops, I was working on the fourth one. So I had to stick at that point with anything I had written so far. I wasn't able to go back and change anything. And then when we would come together, as we have in the States, to put them all into one book, again, I didn't want to go back and change anything. I wanted it to have that sort of integrity of the original four. So it was a lot to be thinking about. So I would just wait until I got, the only thing I knew was the four, the things I mentioned, enabling, complicity, perpetrator, and victim. That's all I knew. But how I was going to tell those stories individually, I waited basically until each time where I would sit down and write chapter one and start.
Does reaction to first book have any impact on the writing of the third book, or do you block it out entirely?
Well, it's impossible really to block it out because, today, with the internet and everything, I mean,
Right.
it's 50 years ago, you could have blocked everything out. It's really impossible now. But the first one was like back home, was really, really re well received and it sold very well. So I felt like I was off to a good start. And the second one, which I'd already handed in, I felt was better. And so I felt like I was, not to sound arrogant, but I felt like I was onto something with it and it was going well. If the first one had been like widely criticized, I would have been, oh dear, I've got three more of these to come. But thankfully, that wasn't the way it worked.
So let's talk about the fire for a moment, because as you say, it is dark and it is bleak, and it does put it into a context. Does it take you longer to write? Is it more difficult? As you said, it was weighing on you. Does that have a what impact does that have on the writing and even the final product, I guess?
Well, it didn't take longer to write because I had given myself very specific deadlines and the publisher had announced it, all four dates. So I had to deliver on time. And what I tend to do is I do tend to get a first draft down relatively quickly. And once I have that first draft, then I can work and work and work on it to get it into shape into what eventually becomes the book. I would say that it was more that there were days where it was sitting down at the desk, I would almost feel like this weight on my shoulders, but know that I just didn't have the luxury of walking away. I was in the middle of a project. It was already out there. I had to keep going. And also, I think in a way, that third part was probably the most important one. If I had got sloppy on that, then it would have messed up the sequence. And I do think that the perpetrator's voice was probably the most interesting one to write about, even though it was the hardest one to write.
And then when you get to the final section and air, is there a sense of, okay, we're wrapping, not only am I telling this story, but we're wrapping this whole thing up?
There was a sense of a little bit more lightness, I think, to that section, and to me as I was writing it, the end was in sight, but I knew how I wanted it to end. is that I want to end positively. Every book, I think, should have its authentic end. So, a book doesn't have to be a happy or a sad ending. It just has to or be authentic. And I felt with this that with the narrator of the last section as the victim, I wanted him to be somebody, as I mentioned, who comes out at the end of the story feeling empowered and saying, I'm not going to allow another moment of darkness. And he spends most of his time on a plane in that section with his 14-year-old son, and his biggest concern is he doesn't want his boy to go through what he went through at that age. So he's not just protective, he's overprotective, he's super overprotective, and that overprotectiveness is causing a rift between the two of them. But if you put two people on a plane for 24 hours together going from Sydney to Ireland, they're going to have to talk to each other. And I thought that was that's the best way to do it. So there was more lightness, I think, to that. Even a few jokes in that section, which there's not too many jokes in the earlier bits, but there's a few jokes in that one.
But boy, you have in that section, but throughout the book, the voice down of a teenager.
I've written a few books for young people as
Yes.
well. I was once a 14-year-old boy myself, and in the the dark days of history. And I've actually, I do think I'm if I can say so myself, I think one of my skills is being able to write young people's voices reasonably well, because I wanted the father and son to be, they love each other. He's always been a good dad. He's always been a good kid. But 14-year-olds are tricky at the best of times. And I wanted them to just be sort of bashing heads a little bit, but not in the same way that, say, Willow and Rebecca do in the earlier sections or when we revisit her.
We also go a bit around the globe in the sense of you don't keep it while the first section is taking place on an island in Ireland, you do not keep it there and it moves around. Was that by choice?
Yeah, it was. We move on to England, we move to Australia, even to Dubai a little bit. And yeah, it was. I felt it could become very claustrophobic if everything was set in one small place. But they're all kind of small settings, the island, the football club, the hospital, the plane. They're all actually quite, small. And there's a small number of characters that each person really interacts with in each one.
Did you learn that, or was that innate in the sense of keeping that cast of characters for each section relatively small?
I think I'm pretty good at sort of like being instinctive about things, that when I start, I have a decent sense of how it's supposed to be structured, how a book is supposed to be structured, how long it should be, how many characters should be involved, how much of a time period. Even though I just basically start with an idea, and I don't plot really in advance, somewhere in the back of my head, I have some sense of all the structural details of a book.
And because of those small places, no matter where you are, things can catch up to you no matter where you are.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose we start with somebody trying to run away from her problems. And you can't really. I mean, and in the second part, Evan is running away from has run away from home. But you can't. I mean, the world is it's a relatively small place, really, and your problems are going to stay with you wherever you go. And that's something that all four characters realize as their own narratives progress, and each one is dealing with both the traumatic past that they have and the whatever it is they're currently putting into the world.
Obviously, we've talked about the abuse and how you're writing about that as the main subject. But in that, there are so many different, as you said earlier, I mean, there's so many different vantage points, there's so many different issues that are correlated, and it is, I would think, from your point of view, really interesting to see where you can go and what you can address once you are at a particular place with a particular character.
Certainly, when I was two-thirds of the way through Water and then planned, said to myself, right, I'm going to write four of these. And when I presented the idea to my editor in the UK, I was very excited about it. It felt like a real challenge. It felt like something interesting that hadn't been done before. And I thought it would be cathartic for me as well, as much as anything else, to dig as deep as possible into those kind of stories and explore my own history with it from being a teenager. And but I think that's good. I'm 25 years publishing novels, And I always kind of want to be able to challenge myself each time and to feel that I'm not sort of resting on my laurels or just writing by rote. You know, I always want to be writing something better every time.
Was it cathartic?
Yeah, it definitely was. And a phrase I've been using actually while I've been talking about these books is I feel like I've written myself out of the subject now, that it took a certain amount of time in my life for me to be able to write it in fiction. But by doing so and by talking about it in interviews and so on and writing pieces, you know, for newspapers or whatever, I think it's been really good for me as a person. Yeah. And I really understand the fact that I'm fortunate enough to have an ability to write these stories and to talk about them, but not everybody has that and don't have that cathartic moment. So perhaps some people who've gone through that experience might read the book and gain something from it, I hope.
When you say write yourself out of it, does that mean in that it's now the story of these characters? It's the story, these four stories that are together, and now we can talk about that, and it's less on you.
Partly that, but I also mean that I feel it's not a subject I'm going to return to.
Yes.
You know, I mentioned A History of Loneliness, a novel from 10 years ago that I wrote, which touched on the subject, but that this book, The Elements, does it much deeper. And I feel almost that I've said everything I need to say in fiction on it in the book. And I mean, it's possible I'll get some great idea at some point, but I don't see another book in my future that explores this particular subject.
So, without asking you what you're working on next, is it short or long?
It's long.
Okay.
Well, actually, I often think that, you know, books are often a reaction against the previous one. So The Elements is contemporary, what I'm writing is historical. The Elements is dark, what I'm writing is quite funny. So it's almost like using a different part of your brain. When you put one project aside, you start something else and let all the other all the other creative juices flow.
Again, John Boyne's new novel is The Elements. It is published by Holt. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.